Welcome to WHRO's Weekly Edition. I'm Jordan Christie.
And I'm Barry Graham.
We highlight the week's news and stories happening all over Hampton Roads. We have some great stories for you as we stride into summer. Williamsburg, James City County superintendent came under fire for words he used in a meeting last week with high school students while discussing the school's potential redistricting.
In recognition of Pride Month, WHRO takes a look at how a church flyer for a spaghetti dinner led to the creation of an LGBTQ newspaper in the latter half of the 20th century.
And Virginia Tech researchers are in the midst of documenting gray foxes across the Commonwealth to learn more about their population numbers.
They've had anecdotal evidence that gray foxes are declining, but the nature of the decline is unknown.
A military judge in Norfolk sentenced the sailor who killed fellow sailor Angelina Resendez to 44 years in prison. WHRO's Steve Walsh has the story.
In an emotional sentencing hearing, Jeremiah Copeland read a statement accepting responsibility for killing 21-year-old Angelina Resendez. His mother and grandmother also took to the stand to apologize to Resendez's mother, Esmeralda Castle, who spoke after the sentencing.
This is the person that took her life, and he's looking me in my eyes and saying that he's sorry, and I accept it, right? And that's it.
Resendez was killed May 29th, 2025. Copeland had recently transferred to the USS James Williams, where Resendez was stationed. At the time of the transfer, Copeland was under investigation for sexual assault allegations from his time on the carrier USS Truman. Copeland pleaded guilty Monday to the murder and acts against two other women. Steve Walsh, WHRO News.
The father of Rollin Hill, who died in 2024 after he was restrained while in custody, has sued the Virginia Beach Sheriff's Office and the city in circuit court. WHRO's John Doucette breaks down the details of the case.
Rollin Hill died in a hospital days after a use of force incident at the Virginia Beach Correctional Center. The wrongful death suit filed by Hill's father, Stanley Hill, names the sheriff's office, the city, and several individuals. It seeks $25 million for each of 22 counts claimed in the civil lawsuit. Among other things, it alleges Rollin Hill was subjected to what it called a deadly beating. It says there were training and policy failures about the use of force and interventions when people are in a mental health crisis. In a statement, the city called Hill's death tragic, but added that it does not believe it is legally liable. Sheriff Rocky Holcomb released a statement saying he can't comment on allegations due to pending litigation and criminal prosecutions. Three former Virginia Beach deputies are accused of second-degree murder in Hill's death. John Doucette, WHRO News.
Nationally, home values are declining. Mortgage rates are high, and home sellers outnumber buyers. Does this mean we're at risk for another housing crash like 2008? WHRO's Toby Cox wanted to find out, so she asked a local economist.
When we saw mortgage rates shoot from 2.5% to 7%, you might have thought, oh, this is the Great Recession happening all over again, right? But it was a very different environment.
That's Nikki Johnson, a regional economist with the Hampton Roads Planning District Commission. In the early 2000s, it was easy to get a loan for a house you couldn't afford. Now, lending standards are stricter, and most mortgages are now fixed rate, which makes the interest rate less vulnerable to market changes. Johnson says today's high mortgage rates can hurt new buyers.
They constrain existing homeowners, but they don't necessarily destabilize them like they did during the Great Recession.
She says the region's housing shortage is a larger concern. Toby Cox, WHRO News.
Williamsburg James City County Schools superintendent drew sharp criticism last week for words he used in a meeting with high school students while discussing the division's pending school redistricting. WHRO's Nick McNamara reports he apologized on Monday, calling his comment a mistake.
Daniel Kiever said he's sorry during a town hall hosted by the Village Initiative, which advocates for school equity in WJCC schools.
That mistake was absolutely something that I would have corrected in the moment had I realized the way that it had been heard by members of the room.
Several parents of students at Lafayette High reported that Kiever, during the meeting last week, told them, "We want students to go to schools with people who look like you," which Kiever insists wasn't what he intended to communicate. Kiever said the comment has served as a division point in a redistricting process that's been controversial. The Village Initiative in May raised concerns that the maps would deepen inequalities across schools, concentrating more students of color and economically disadvantaged students on certain campuses. Nick McNamara, WHRO News.
Williamsburg James City County Schools is a member of Heretta, which owns the WHRO broadcast license. In Sussex County, scientists are working to bring an endangered bird back. WVTF Cindy Hausman reports on the race against time to save the red-cockaded woodpecker.
About 150 years before the American Revolution, settlers arriving on our shores found an amazing sight. 90 million acres of pine forest, stretching from what's now southeastern Virginia to Florida and Texas. Those trees would become an engine for the British Navy, supplying pitch to seal boat hulls and tar to grease wagon axles. Scientist Brian Van Eerden with the Nature Conservancy says farmers cut down more trees to grow crops, and another animal kept longleaf pines from coming back.
Feral hogs that were throughout the coastal plain in the 1700s, 1800s, they foraged heavily on the seeds of longleaf pine and seedlings of longleaf pine, and then removal of fire. Over the course of 400 years, that forest went down to just 200 trees that we could account for.
The destruction took a toll on species that depended on longleaf pines, like the red-cockaded woodpecker. A cockade was a ribbon rosette that military men wore on their hats. These small birds are speckled with black and white feathers, but the males have a dash of red on their heads. They're also known for their industrious ways. Teams of woodpeckers create cavities in trees over months or years, providing a safe space for nesting. As the forest declined, so did the birds, their numbers falling to about 200 after Hurricane Hugo hit. Again, Brian Van Eerden with the Nature Conservancy.
The Francis Marion National Forest had the largest population of red-cockaded woodpeckers range-wide. And then the hurricane came through and just leveled the forest.
That's when scientists began creating cavities in trees to house red-cockaded woodpeckers.
That's a matter of a human establishing an RCW cavity in the course of a couple of hours, which is a lot shorter than an RCW. It could take 2 years for an RCW, a group of RCWs, to excavate a cavity.
And the birds caught one other lucky break when the largest producer of timber in the U.S., International Paper, decided to sell their land in Virginia. That allowed the Nature Conservancy to buy 5,000 acres. Now they're doing controlled burns, thinning out some loblolly pines, planting longleafs, so more sun can reach the forest floor. As a diversity of plants returned, more insects appeared. Ants, beetles, caterpillars, cockroaches, and spiders. A buffet for the birds nesting above. Today, ornithologist Chance Hines scales trees in the Piney Grove Preserve in Sussex County between Richmond and Hampton Roads. He gently removes baby birds from their nests so he can weigh them and attach tiny leg bands for future identification. The parents are none too happy, but they quickly return to feed their babies once Hines has put them back.
They're still pretty pink. They don't have a lot of feathers protruding, just starting to come out of the tail, which is what happens on day six.
The babies struggle against the intruder, sometimes falling asleep, exhausted, in his hands. But they don't seem to be harmed in any way, and Hines predicts a record number of nestlings, more than 50, will survive. Already, the Center for Conservation Biology at William & Mary counts about 150 birds in the area, up from 8 25 years ago. I'm Sandy Hausman.
Still ahead on Weekly Edition, NASA unveiled the astronauts for the Artemis 3 mission this week, and one of them is a Hampton Roads native. But first, Chesapeake City Council voted Tuesday to raise its members' salaries after rejecting a larger pay increase in March. WHRO's Natalia Nelson reports the 3.5% cost of living adjustment is the same wage increase given to full-time city employees.
City Council members currently earn $25,000 annually, with the mayor earning $27,000. Still, Councilmember Amanda Nguyen's voted against the proposal to increase their salaries.
I just don't feel comfortable voting for a raise for myself, especially in a time when things are so expensive, like we're also struggling. Giving us additional money is not appropriate.
The ordinance also directs staff to include annual cost of living adjustments for the city council and mayor in each future annual budget, which the council would approve each year. Councilmember Les Smith said during a debate in March over a larger salary increase that higher pay would make public service more accessible. That proposal was unanimously defeated. The raise will go into effect July 1st, 2027. Natalia Nelson, WHRO News.
A group behind a proposed development of homes and a museum in James City County asked for more time before officials vote to rezone the land. WHRO's Nick McNamara breaks down what changes need to be made.
Developers are calling the concept the Bluffs at Kiskiak. It features more than 700 homes, more than half being a senior community, commercial and office space, and an open-air museum showcasing 42 20-foot-tall busts of American presidents, once located at President's Park in York County. To move forward, the County Board of Supervisors needs to change the zoning. Several board members on Tuesday, though, voiced concerns, many of which were shared by rural residents who spoke at the meeting. They questioned whether a project that size and a tourist attraction fits the area's character and is financially viable. Others, however, supported the plans for affordable and senior housing, which the county needs. Developers asked for months to address the concerns. The board gave them until its October 13th meeting. Nick McNamara, WHRO News.
Newport News City Council passed a temporary curfew for unaccompanied minors through 4th of July weekend. WHRO's Ashley White reports it's the latest measure in Hampton Roads addressing teen takeovers and large unsupervised gatherings.
The council on Tuesday unanimously passed the change, which creates a curfew at the city center from 7 p.m. to 6 a.m. on Fridays and Saturdays. It also voted to permanently enact a citywide 10 p.m. to 6 a.m. curfew. Mayor Philip Jones said the action was necessary after increasingly large groups of youth gathered at Oyster Point.
We're just trying to ensure that we continue to have the highest level of public safety, especially in our core business district.
The crowds continue to grow and sometimes result in fights or other unsafe conditions. It will be a community effort to enforce the curfew and keep matters from escalating. Teen takeovers are popping up in cities across the U.S., and leaders are trying to find solutions, including in Virginia Beach, which enacted its own oceanfront curfew. Ashley White, WHRO News.
June marks Pride Month, so I decided to do some digging on how a church flyer advertising a spaghetti dinner turned into a galvanizing force for the gay community.
In southeastern Virginia, members of the local LGBTQ community began to slowly organize in the mid-1970s. There were a plethora of gay-friendly bars and establishments, gay athletic leagues, picnics, and conferences. And perhaps most importantly, there emerged a newspaper dedicated to the LGBTQ community. In 1976, local gays and supporters who had begun attending the local Unitarian Universalist Church created a social and political group called the Unitarian Universalist Gay Caucus. Jim Early joined it in 1977.
Several of the Unitarian members of the church got together, and they weren't necessarily gay, but they thought that around 1975, there should be some support for gay and lesbian people from the church.
Caucus members decided that they needed a newsletter to publicize events they were organizing. The first issue was a single one-sided type sheet that discussed an upcoming spaghetti dinner and a philosophical statement. We devote ourselves to the improvement of gay life through increased positive visibility. Our own community press was born, and circulation began to grow, with 15,000 copies being distributed in libraries, bars, and restaurants. Jim Early said the paper became a key nucleus of the gay community.
It was a lifeline to gay men and lesbians. It was where they could find out about what people they lived around, who they were, and what they were doing. And it was affirmative in such a strong way for them to come to these meetings and the other gay men and lesbians. It was just liberating.
By the late 1990s, the paper, facing increasing cost, declared bankruptcy before eventually ceasing publication in 1998. At the time, it was one of the nation's oldest gay and lesbian newspapers. Fred Osgood, who was there at its inception, said the paper was a launching point for the local gay community.
It was really quite a crowning jewel over time. It was the only place where there was a gay newspaper being published. It provided an outlet for a lot of people who had some motivation to socialize and to associate with other gay people.
Despite our own closure, the need for the LGBTQ community to stay abreast and feel a sense of connectivity remained. Eric House moved to the area just as our own was collapsing. He sensed a need for local gay residents to have a source for information and news. He began publishing both a magazine and an online blog.
We wanted to highlight unique stories, tell people stories, make sure that those stories are visible.
Eric House's online blog, Outwire, is today's source for information for the local gay community. House says in a region like Hampton Roads, it's imperative to be that conduit.
Let's just say you're this 18-year-old kid and you're not going to go to college, so you enlist in the Navy and you land here in Norfolk, Virginia. Where do you find your community? How do you find a community to get involved with if you're a queer kid, you know? The guide is a good resource, but the internet is where it's at right now. And that gets a lot of hits. So I think people are looking at that. So I think that makes up, in some ways, for relevant content for our community, because I try to do things that I have not done in the magazine for the website.
As the month-long Pride pageantry unveils, it was a one-page typewritten newsletter in a Ghent church that helped launch awareness of the gay community. And today, our own's legacy is still very much felt. For WHRO News, I'm Barry Graham.
Twenty years ago, Virginia enshrined a ban on same-sex marriage into the state's constitution. A U.S. Supreme Court ruling nullified it. This fall, Virginians will have a chance to remove it from the state's founding document and replace it with an affirmative right for same-sex couples to marry. WVTF's Brad Kuttner has this report.
June 1st is the start of LGBTQ Pride Month, so it was fitting for advocates of same-sex marriage to start their new campaign to roll back Virginians' ban on the practice Monday. Here's Democratic Delegate Kirk McPike of Alexandria, who was flanked by his husband at Monday's event.
Every Virginia family deserves to be treated with dignity, protected equally under the law, and to be free to build a future without government interference. Virginia is for all lovers. Let's make sure our Constitution reflects that.
The legislative process to get the amendment before voters did include support from a few Republican lawmakers, but those conservatives who oppose the amendment plan to push Virginians to vote against it. Lynchburg Senator Mark Peek, who said his faith teaches him marriage is between one man and one woman, is among them. He said his supporters would like to see all three amendments, including expanding felon voting and guaranteeing abortion access, fail this fall. There are legal challenges to the abortion amendment dealing with the language of the proposed referendum as well. Unless the state's high court intervenes again, Virginians will vote on all three amendments this November. In Richmond, I'm Brad Kuttner.
NASA's Artemis 3 mission will be the next step to get humans back to the moon. And one of the four members of the mission's crew is from Hampton Roads. WHRO's Lydia Winstead has the story.
NASA astronaut Andre Douglas is a Chesapeake native and was selected as a mission specialist for the 2027 mission. Douglas graduated from Western Branch High School in 2004. He was the backup crew member for the Artemis 2 mission in April. Artemis 3 will be his first time in space. Here's Douglas speaking to NPR's Scott Detrow.
Going to space, that has been my childhood dream since I was 7 years old. So for that to finally come to fruition, I am ecstatic.
The crew will remain in Earth's orbit for 2 weeks as they put the Orion capsule through its paces in preparation for the Artemis 4 moon landing. Lydia Winstead, WHRO News.
The FIFA World Cup kicked off yesterday, and the U.S.'s first game is tonight against Paraguay. WHRO's Brian Saunders went around the area to learn how bars and restaurants across Hampton Roads are locking in extended hours for tournament matches.
Local spots like the Fish and Pig in Norfolk and Lindy's in Virginia Beach are gearing up for packed houses, while the Short Break Pizza and Tap House expects a massive turnout from the region's diverse soccer community. Shorebreak co-owner J.B. Mass says the heavy international presence in Hampton Roads makes for an electric atmosphere.
You'll get English fans, French fans, Spanish fans, you know, and then the casual soccer fans who are you know, love watching Messi play with Argentina or Ronaldo with Portugal.
Mass says because soccer matchups wrap up in about 2 hours, venues are well positioned to handle the late night crowds. The first World Cup matchup is Thursday afternoon. The final is July 19th. Brian Saunders, WHRO News.
Virginia Tech researchers are in the midst of a massive project to document gray foxes across the Commonwealth. WHRO's Katherine Hefner embedded herself with the crew to track down the elusive critters.
It's a beautiful morning as Victoria Monette treks through a wooded area on the eastern shore. She carefully looks through the sea of green, searching for a perfect spot.
Well, I look for some kind of pathway. It can be a game trail.
could be a hiking trail like this one.
Monette is a PhD student at Virginia Tech focused on wildlife conservation. Her search is for a sturdy tree trunk to mount a camera. The motion sensor device will take photos of all sorts of wildlife passing by. The hope is to spot one animal in particular, gray foxes. Virginia officials think the species could be in decline. Gray foxes are harvested, and Monette says hunters and trappers have found fewer of them over the past 20 years.
They've had anecdotal evidence that gray foxes are declining, but the nature of the decline is unknown. It's not known if that is actual numbers and there's just a lower population, or if they're just using the habitat differently.
That's where she comes in with the Virginia Gray Fox Project. It's funded by the State Department of Wildlife Resources. Over the past 2 years, the small team put up more than 900 cameras in western and central Virginia, mostly on private land. This summer, they're adding another 500 or so along the coast. At the forest on the eastern shore recently, Monette settles on a red maple facing a stream to set up her camera.
So this is going to be station number 156.
Gray foxes are smaller than red foxes. They're about the size of a house cat and have bushy tails with black tips. They swim, they climb trees, they eat pretty much anything. Many Virginians are familiar with red foxes, but Monette says fewer know about grays.
A lot of people don't realize we have gray foxes here. Red foxes are more comfortable around people, so they're just more visible in, you know, in people's backyards or in more suburban settings. Gray foxes are a bit more timid, it seems.
Ed Augustine has seen quite a few red foxes playing on his 2-acre property on the shore. He offered up his land for the Gray Fox Project in the hopes of spotting the more elusive species.
I would love to see a gray fox or anything that happens to wander through. I think it would be really cool to see anything, even if it's just a possum or a raccoon or something like that. It's always fun to see wildlife.
Seeing that other wildlife is just as helpful. Monette wants to learn where gray foxes are, but also where they aren't.
If the gray fox isn't there, it's still necessary information, but also it's important to know what is there where the gray fox is absent.
So far, the cameras have captured critters, including a black bear inspecting the lens. Raccoons slinking through the dark, and turkeys crunching through autumn leaves. Plus bobcats, an elk, a groundhog, even an armadillo, and deer. Lots and lots of deer. About half of the cameras picked up red foxes. Only about 16% saw grays. That included a pair playing around up in the mountains. Other states have recently researched their own gray fox declines, such as Illinois and Ohio. They found culprits include habitat loss, disease, and competition with other predators like coyotes. Monette hopes her data can help Virginia decide how to protect the species. The fieldwork isn't so glamorous. After putting up one of the cameras on the eastern shore, Monette brushes off ticks and gets on her hands and knees. She's mimicking the movement of a fox passing the camera.
So this is how we test to make sure it's going to get it.
In about 2 months, she'll be back to take down these cameras and put them up elsewhere in coastal Virginia. Catherine Hafner, WHRO News.
You've been listening to WHRO's Weekly Edition. We had help today from WHRO's Toby Cox, John Doucette, Catherine Hafner, Nick McNamara, Natalia Nelson, Brian Saunders, Steve Walsh, Ashley White, and Lydia Winstead.
And WVTF Sandy Hausman and Brad Kuttner. Also, Connor Worley, who produced today's show. A reminder that you can always catch full episodes on the Weekly Edition podcast feed.
You can get your news updates at WHRO.org and the WHRO Reports podcast feed.
For all of us at WHRO and WHRV, I'm Barry Graham.
And I'm Jordan Christie. Have a great weekend.